Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start with Antonio Brown. Now, when the Antonio Brown story first started to kick off and it blew up the way that it did, I did have my concerns. Not about the sourcing of the story, but rather about the conditioning of the story. The condition of the story itself. And I made my concerns about that at that time. You know, the pacing and the rhythm was all off. Like, we had not even gotten to the wild card weekend, and Brown was live tweeting during Mike Tomlin pressers, jumping up on Instagram, showing up on musical talent shows to be judged by people who hosted an MTV show like 30 years ago. The pacing of the story was all wrong. The story was great, but the pacing wasn't. And I warned everybody at that time. I wasn't concerned that the story didn't have legs. I was concerned that it did not have a good cardio engine. It's a marathon, but AB and everybody else was treating it like a shuttle drill. We did not need a story to run that hot, that soon, that early. We needed that story later on in the year when we needed that story. So trade rumors were flying immediately. How is he going to fit into this team? What would the Steelers get for him in return? And all of that was going down before we even got to mid-January. Again, we didn't need that then. There were lots of other things to talk about at that point. We needed that later on. But that story, like, jumped on a Peloton bike and sprinted until its lungs popped out. And then saw that only 15 seconds had passed by. That story needed to do some long days of steady state heart rate work to get itself into shape for the long run. You want to mix in a sprint or two, little interval training every now and then for pacing? That's fine. Do that. But now it's so tired that when there is breaking news about it, it's kind of hard to get worked up. As an example, that report from ESPN. That report from ESPN that included one former Steeler saying, quote, Mike Tomlin essentially told the group, we'll tolerate it because of what he brings on the field. But the minute production stops, you don't overlook it. End quote. Oh, so it's fine as long as he produces. But the second he stops producing, then we're not going to tolerate that. Right. And how is that different? How is that different than any other star player in any other sport? It's exactly the same. Now, I'm not saying that that's not an interesting anecdote, or not a part of the larger picture. But if you saw that from that story and you freaked out about Brown getting to play by different rules, I got news for you. Coaches and teams will always tolerate guys doing a lot of things away from the field or the court because of what they bring to the field or the court. That's how it is. That's how it's always been. That's how it's always going to be. And then when they stop bringing it to the field or the court, the team will stop tolerating it. But this is nothing new. In any sport, Antonio Brown has at least 100 receptions and 1,200 yards in each of his last six seasons. So, yes, it is distinctly possible that Antonio Brown receives different treatment. He gets to do different things away from the field because nobody can do what he can do on the field. Do you really think that the same rules that apply to the 53rd man on that roster apply to Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger? Hell no, of course not. And here's the other thing that keeps coming up in that ESPN piece. Essentially, every guy who has ever played with AB says he is the hardest working guy they've ever seen. That AB is not some guy who's putting up numbers but letting himself go. He's putting up numbers because he's putting in work. Kobe Hamilton, as an example, told ESPN, quote, Brown is stupid competitive, never takes a day off. He's full speed. I know he's not a bleep like the media and the fans are portraying him to be. He worked to have those cars, end quote. Now, on the other hand, punctuality, timeliness to meetings, that apparently is not his thing. But as one current Steeler said, quote, who gives a bleep if he's 15 minutes late to a meeting, end quote. You know, that philosophy that they'll tolerate stuff until the player can't produce, it's fine. The moment the player stops producing, you stop tolerating his garbage. But But what do you do when you don't want to tolerate the player and he's still producing? Because that's exactly where the Steelers are right now with Antonio Brown. He hasn't fallen off the cliff, not even close. His closest thing to a down year in the last six seasons is then still better than almost anybody else's career year. And while much of that story is about Brown showing up late to meetings or Brown getting special treatment, that's not the real issue. Apparently, the real issue here is the dynamic between the quarterback and the receiver, the dynamic between Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. Quote, "This has been brewing for years. It's just now coming to the surface, and it's probably over," end quote. Look, I don't know if I'm going to take an anonymous former teammate's declaration that the relationship is over as gospel, but clearly that's a problem. And it might not be one that's solved by Brown showing up on time for meetings. Do you see me working? Him showing up on time for meetings is not going to fix a problem if there's a problem between he and the quarterback. So what do we really have? You got two Hall of Famers, both who have earned and received special treatment. So what do? You're not going to trade the quarterback. So what do? You trade Brown? I mean, really? You're going to trade a Hall of Famer. You're going to trade one of your best players. If you're the Steelers, the best that you can hope for is the story burns itself out and it's due to a lack of conditioning. Does the fact that it attacked 50 kilos like it was 50 meters work in your favor? And then after the Pro Bowl and after the Super Bowl, everybody goes away for a while and it all dies down? Maybe then you can work it out. Maybe then you can patch it up. Because the bottom line is, you're not going to find another Ben Roethlisberger and you're not going to find another Antonio Brown. So if I'm them, I'm doing everything I possibly can to keep these two guys together. And I'm leaning on the fact that there are no more musical talent shows with D-list judges that AB can go on for a while. It would behoove everybody to work it out. But AB's got to know this. It's a quarterback league. They're not going to move the quarterback. In a battle between AB and Big Ben, Big Ben's going to win. And this is not all on AB. 1-800-636-8686. How do you think it plays out? How do you think it should play out? If I'm the Steelers, I'm doing everything in my power to make this thing work. Because although AB is to blame, it is not all his fault. It can't be. It can't be. And also, I think there's a lot more to this than him showing up late for meetings. We would not be where we are with him and this team if it were only about him showing up for late for meetings. And it's not about his production dropping off because it hasn't. In other words, in large part, it's a quarterback wide receiver thing. In the ATL, Atlanta, all next week for Super Bowl. Normally, when I go to the week of Super Bowl, one of the first guys I look for is this guy. As you can tell, I was not going to wait that long. He is a Patriots insider for NBC Sports Boston. We consider him a good friend of the program. Tom Curran is my guest. He joins us to talk about the Pats. Tom, good to have you back. How are you?
It's fantastic, and I consider you also a good friend of mine, and the program is a good friend of mine.
My man, I appreciate that, Tom. Thanks so much. You are that. So it's late January. We're talking about the Pats and the Super Bowl yet again. Tom, given all the drama that surrounded that team after they lost to the Eagles in last year's Super Bowl, and then in the offseason, is there any bit or any part of you that is surprised to see this team back where they usually are?
I would say there's about 78% of me, maybe the 84-88% of me is surprised.
Okay.
Because, you know, so many things happened during the season and prior to the season that really made it hard to imagine that they were going to be in this position. They were horrendous. I mean, just on the field, they were horrendous against the run. They didn't have any outside threats after they got rid of Brandon Cooks. They had to bring Josh Gordon in. Do you think that they were dying to bring in a guy who had had the personal problems that he had? And he was a very vital part of it. They had no running back because they lost Jeremy Hill. Gronk was injured. Gronk was a little bit, you know, disaffected. Brady wasn't getting much protection. So all of those things combined made me say, look, it's going to be an uphill fight. They don't look as good as the other teams in the AFC right now.
Football season might be coming to a close, but resume season never, ever ends. And if you're looking for a new gig, get to ZipRecruiter. In sports, there are smart moves, and then there are some not-so-smart moves, like calling a timeout to kill the clock and get your offense right. That's smart. But calling a timeout with no timeouts left? Now, that's not smart. The same is true when you're hiring. There are smart and not so smart ways, like job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. That's not smart. The smart way, letting ZipRecruiter find people with the right skills and actively inviting them to apply. It is why it's rated number one by employers in the U.S. based on Trustpilot rating of hiring sites with at least 1,000 reviews. And right now, you can try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Tom Curran joining us, and that's why he is in part a very good friend of the program. Listen, so what about Belichick then? When you consider all that, where does this season rank among the coaching jobs that Bill Belichick has done?
High, fairly high, but I also think that you have to look back too, Jim, and say, okay, well, how much of the adversity was brought about by his own hand and his own decisions? Okay, I do think that the dysfunction that we reported on beginning really last November and that we reported on throughout the offseason probably came to a head, and they were able to have a clearing of the air. And I think that Belichick came across the aisle a little bit and said, look, we're going to do things differently. And as a result, there's probably still some things that Tom Brady is bitter about. There's probably things the coaching staff is bitter about in terms of the way that Gronk and Tom acted in the offseason. But when it came to the football, they were able to, you know, put it in a box, put it on a shelf, and move away. Whereas I think a lot of other franchises, they are ego-driven as opposed to being success-driven. These guys say, okay, my ego will be fed if I win another Super Bowl. Not stats, not primary, you know, ownership of the credit. So they say, okay, you know what? Let's move forward. And they were able to do that. But it took a damn long time because of that dysfunction, I think.
Tom Curran joining us. All right, so you've got those issues you mentioned. And then you've got the question of Malcolm Butler. Obviously, there were players who were not happy that Malcolm Butler was benched in the Super Bowl. Nearly a year later, Tom, why did this guy not play in the Super Bowl? Was there ever an answer that made sense?
There's a lot of conjecture and perhaps somewhat rumor-based theorizing that it wasn't just that Malcolm Butler wasn't sharp in practice. It was more to do with he showed up and said, you know what, I'm out of here in a week. They've treated me poorly. I haven't played well, and I'm kind of going to do things on my own terms. When he learned he wasn't starting, this is an understanding that I have, and he was asked to go out and do some special teams work early in the week after he showed up, he didn't want to go. And, you know, things bubbled up from there, and they continued to be a level of agitation as to how engaged is this guy. I don't know what level of insubordination he showed, but I do think that insubordination was a large part of why he didn't see the field at all.
We're talking to Tom Curran. Tom, you mentioned Bill Belichick may have come across the aisle or may have changed his approach to a certain extent. Can you see any examples of that in particular? How did he change, if he changed?
Great question. Yeah, and it's something I'm going to work on for the early part of next week. How did the Patriots learn to have fun again? And they went on, and they always do, but they went on some of those, you know, more enjoyable type of team-building efforts in the off season. I think they went to Fenway one day and did some stuff. And but some of the tangible things are, and I had folks within the organization say to me, look, we're talking about a toxic atmosphere there, Tom. You have to understand, it's only two guys who have a problem. Everybody else is on board. I think that might have been overstating it based upon the person's vantage point who told me that. But I do think that it wasn't a soup to nuts, all 53 guys were agitated. I do think guys are always going to have a hard time with Bill Belichick's way of doing things and way of basing his business decisions and way of team building and the effort that he demands. But I think he backed it off a little bit, and he did do a lot of team-building events. And I think that once Tom was happy and once Gronk was happy and Alex Guerrero was back involved and Gronk wasn't being – and I don't think actually Gronk ever got happy this year. But once they were satisfied and dummied up for the rest of the year, then they were able to have more success.
All right, so if it's more of a two-guy thing than a 53-guy thing, what about that second guy, Tom Brady? Did he make any kind of adjustments in his approach? Did he change at all?
You know what? I've said this before. He's a love guy. He just wants to get along. He's not confrontational. And as a result, I think over the course of time, that's why, in part, he does play for half the money. Because Robert Kraft or Bill Belichick are able to persuade and say, look, you know, we need you, we love you, we forever want you here, but we're going to make everything better around you if you take less. Okay, I'll go along with that, yeah. So all he needed was the level of appreciation. Remember Giselle mentioning it, and it was something that was mentioned to me several times by folks close to Tom, a level of appreciation for what he does. So all he needed to get was some of that affirmation that we like to hear at work sometimes. It's a really good job. Remember last year when he split his hand open and Belichick's like, you know, it's not like he had a heart surgery. things like that. They do chip away, I think, at an employee's idea of where his boss values him. And I think that the Garoppolo stuff, too, I'm prattling on here, but the Garoppolo stuff, too, Jim, becomes something that Brady looks at and goes, you guys have been trying to replace me since 2014. Now that you traded him, you're stuck with me, and I know you're not happy about it. All he needed to be was told, believe it or not, we love you. We want you here.
Tom Curran, actually, by the way, Tom, you're not prattling on. I think this is great. I think this is all great, great information. It's all really fascinating to me. What about Gronk? What did Gronk need to hear? What was his concern?
I don't think he's ever gotten over it. I think he's come to an uneasy truce with, look, I'm going to be paid half of what everybody else is. I'm going to take kill shots over the middle. I didn't have a good time last year. I'm playing this year for an incentive-based deal that I'm never going to get close to achieving, and he didn't. The entire offense came down on me, and I didn't have fun last year. And he had a very hard time throughout the season with it. But he finally, and I've written stories about it, and he's actually been kind of candid about it, he had to get to a place mentally where he was okay with those things. You know, he wasn't going to quit. He didn't like the rate at which he was being paid. He was concerned about his body. The circle around him, Gronk Inc., his outstanding but very involved family around him, Drew Rosenhaus, I think probably Tom to a degree, they all would say, look, you got to take care of Gronk here because they ain't taking care of you. You're making, you know, $9 million and Sammy Watkins is making 16. You've been through 7 surgeries. You're 29 years old. You're a kill shot away from, you know, being out of the league in some way in diminished capacity. So look out for you. And I think he had to get it through his head that, okay, while they might be taking advantage of me, since I'm not going to go on wildcat strike here, I better just come to some kind of a mental spot where I can deal with it. And I think he achieved that.
That makes sense to me. Tom Curran joining us for a couple of more moments. So where does that leave him? What are the odds that next Sunday is Gronk's last game?
It's the biggest story coming out of the game. Best tight end that we've really ever seen, and we could compare some other guys certainly, but I think that he's done because I don't think the Patriots are going to bump him up to a level where he feels he's being paid in accordance with what he had. The Patriots tried to deal him last year when they were making him less. That also left a mental dent on him. So I can't imagine. Here's a prediction, and I give it a 5% chance. No one's ever said this. I would not be surprised at a Gronk sabbatical for a year.
Hmm.
I mean, he's only 29. And he's still a very powerful guy, and I don't know what his off-field life is going to feel like. But I don't know if it would be a horrible idea for him to consider taking a year off.
And then, so finally, how about the big picture? This run of Super Bowl wins, of course, started against the Rams, and now it's the Rams once again. Is there any kind of feeling that maybe this is all coming full circle and that this might be the last dance for some of the key pieces involved? You know, we mentioned Gronk, but maybe he's not the only one. Is that possible?
Sure, yeah, and I wrote a story in October about bills coming due because it's not just Gronk, but you know Brady's is going to have a $27 million cap hit. Do you want to still, regardless of what he's done this year, re-up with a 42-year-old quarterback? And if you re-up with him, he's not going to play the game of, oh, yeah, it's okay if you pay me $20 million when Jimmy's making $29 million. So are you going to re-up him, and how long do you re-up him to make it equitable? So you're going to do until he's 45? So Brady's up, and he's entering the walk year of his contract for the first time. Gronk will probably be elsewhere. Dante Hightower has a huge cap hit. Devin McCourty has a large cap hit. So there's a lot of decisions to be made, and they don't have depth at tight end behind Gronk. They don't have wide receiver depth. I mean, they're nice. God bless them. They're doing everything they can. But no one's going to say Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett are the guys you want to go onto the field with as your one and your two.
So, Tom, finally, if Brady were to win, would that impact his decision-making? And how?
I don't think it's going to. I think he's having too much fun. I really do. And he's been too insistent during this season about continuing to play. You know, he's reiterated it to Jim Gray recently. So I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think I truly think he is going to stick around. And so the folks who think he might retire after the game, I don't agree with them.
Friday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by my pals at On Deck. Small business owners, listen up. Do you need help managing cash flow, hiring employees, purchasing inventory, or upgrading your office space? Most traditional banks lack the technology and the resources to truly understand a small business, and they'd rather just lend to larger, more established businesses. On Deck is 100% committed to small business owners with fast, easy, and tailored financing. You can get funding in as quickly as 24 hours with term loans up to $500,000, lines of credit up to $100,000, none of which require business collateral. The application process is so simple, it will not impact your personal credit. If you're a small business owner and you need access to capital, go to ondeck.com/Rome. That's ondeck.com/Rome right now. As an exclusive listener to this podcast, you will receive a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. You can apply online or by phone and get approved in just minutes. Once again, go to ondeck.com/Rome. That's ondeck.com/Rome for a free consultation. Do that right now. Before the Rams and the Pats jump on their respective team birds and head to Atlanta for a week under the big top, both Sean McVay and Bill Belichick had a chance to address the local media one last time before the circus truly begins. Sean McVay had his presser. He had his presser on his 33rd birthday. I mean, it's how young this guy is. It seems like he's been around for a long time now, right? He's still just 33. And if you want to see an awkward start to a pre-Super Bowl press conference, peep how this thing got started. Check how this went down. The media room busted out an absolutely cringy version of happy birthday to the local head coach.
Oh, nice. Got my hair gel.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear coach.
There you go. All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. No, I can't.
You get the full treatment today.
There you go. I guess so. Nice.
No.
All right, birthday present. No questions.
I mean, damn, did that really happen? I mean, it's always awkward enough when you're like at a TGIF's or something or an Applebee's and that breaks out. This guy's an NFL head coach. You want to talk about a freaking trooper. Somehow, some way, this guy's able to grin his way through not one, but two different versions of HBD. And he even pretends to think that it's funny that somebody left him a couple of jugs of hair gel on his podium.
Oh, nice. Got my hair gel.
I mean, what a good dude, right? How about the guts on that one gal who doubled down and then did that second version in Espanol? Broke out of Feliz Cumpleaños. This dude's prepping for the game of his life against two freaking legends, and he's being held hostage at his own presser. Think of how ridiculous that scene is. That's Sean, the 33-year-old head coach, prepping for the Super Bowl. Not Gary, the 33-year-old from marketing, stuck singing happy birthday with some lame crew in the break room just so he can grab a slice of ice cream cake and bring it back to the cubicle. Like, come on, man. Go down there. You want the cake? Get your ass down there. You're singing happy birthday. I mean, that was just weird. I mean, I understand that he's a really popular guy, a really likable guy, but the media is singing happy birthday to Sean McVay. Really weird. So while the 33-year-old is getting serenaded back in L.A., the 66-year-old grump was doing his thing in front of the mic.
Bill, you always say get to nerves, and not just for the postseason, but for any game that matters. Do those nerves change at all for the Super Bowl? Or if so?
Same answer as last week. Same answer as last week.
Would have been great if that whole birthday crew had shown up for Bill for like 65, singing happy birthday to him, left a pair of scissors on the podium so he could cut off his sleeves. And then when he's like rolling his eyes, that one gal breaks out with, hey, Guillermo, Feliz cumpleaños. Guillermo. Anyway, there was one topic that the hood was all about yesterday. One topic that the mumbler would not stop talking about, and that is the son of bum. Because when he was asked a question about the 71-year-old guy who coordinates the Rams D, then my man finally got loose. Listen to the enunciation and energy from old man Guillermo.
Putting his players in position to be productive, make plays. So when he had Von Miller, he did things. He didn't change what he did. He just, the volume and the percentages shifted to, you know, accentuate a player like that or Aaron Donald or as a menu, and he selects the ones that fit best against his opponent and the situations, as the situations come up in that game. Now this year, they've definitely gone from, you know, high percentage man coverage to high percentage zone coverage here in the second half of the season, but that's been very effective for him. Obviously,
it's got to be the longest answer in the history of the hood. All of a sudden, this guy is not mumbling through nothing. This guy all of a sudden becomes Pete Carroll, all hyped up, talking really fast, enunciating clearly. I mean, that wasn't just an answer. That was literally a masterclass on the son of bum's entire career. I half expected him to get out a grease board and start detailing the finer points of Wade's scheme, breaking down the subtle differences from his time back with the Houston Oilers in the 70s to right now. The hood has not gone off like that since he hopped on that random lacrosse podcast and started spitting knowledge there.
It's funny because when I grew up and, you know, my dad coached the Naval Academy, that was a little bit of a frustration for him. As I can remember him talking about how, you know, these guys come in and get 1,500 on their college boards and they're, you know...
Hey, listen, those who know him always say that none of us know him, that he's not... The guy that we see is not the guy they see. They must be talking about that guy. Listen to him. Could he be any more lucid, any more coherent? Listen to him elaborate and enunciate. That's not...
Football instinct.
I think I answered that last one.
Trouble reading and writing, and they just weren't, you know, very literate or very well educated.
The I think I answered that last week is like the constipated version of Guillermo.
I think I answered that last week.
Same answer as 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 last week. Anybody got any Metamucil? Same answer as last week. Anybody got any of that citrus Miralax?
Oh, but ask this guy about lacrosse, and you can't shut him up. Listen, here's a subplot that people are not talking about. It's not McVay v. Hood, but McDaniels v. Son of Bum. That's got every chance to be the battle that decides where the Lombardi lives for the next year. And while everybody is hammering New England at the betting window, there's actually a battle that Son of Bum has won pretty soundly. That battle. Especially when he was coordinating that no-fly zone defense back in Denver. Remember? The Pats lost 2 of 3 to the Broncos when Son of Bum was running that D. TB12 completed only 51% of his passes in those three games. He was sacked 9 times. The Patriots have done an amazing job of keeping him clean this postseason and throughout the regular season. But back then, they were getting pressure. They were hitting him. They were knocking him down. So you want to know why the hood just gave a TED talk on Wade's D, it's because he knows how deadly it's been. And while that no call in NOLA got all the attention, the hood did not spend the week worrying about the yellow hanky that stayed zippered in the ref's back pocket. He was studying the padlock that the Rams put on the Saints offense. If you want to know how much respect he has for Son of Bum's unit, just ask him. Hell, dude probably is still talking about it right now. Anthony Lynn is my guest. Anthony, great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Good to be back, man.
How you feeling, Coach? What's up?
Sunny Orlando. That's Pro Bowl, you know. It's been kind of bittersweet. You know, we'd rather be playing. But I guess if we're not playing, this is a pretty good option. You know, we're down here with the league's done a hell of a job down here with this Pro Bowl. I mean, just entertaining our fans and making this thing as nice as possible for our families and just having the opportunity to coach some of these elite athletes, you know, best of my games. It's been pretty cool.
Anthony Lynn joining us. That's a great answer. I was going to say, you know, the Pro Bowl is a time for players to get together, for some guys maybe to pick each other's brains. As a head coach, can you also approach the week and the weekend as a learning experience, or basically are you there to have a good time and make sure nobody gets hurt?
You know, we're definitely making sure no one gets hurt because these practices are definitely not the tempo I was expecting. But these guys are having a good time, and a lot of fans, you know. I've been to a couple in Hawaii, and I can definitely understand why they do it here in the United States now, because we get so many fans here, and I think that's good for our league and our players.
Anthony Lynn is at the Pro Bowl. He joins us now. You know, he mentioned it being bittersweet. After that loss to New England, you had said, quote, we had a good year, but after that butt-kicking, no one will be complacent. Everybody will be looking for ways to get better. So as you look back on the season, I'm curious, what kind of thoughts do you have? For instance, are you able to see the positives, or does the way the season ended leave a bitter taste in your mouth, and are you kind of focused on that?
Well, the bitter taste is definitely there. I'm not going to lie about that. You know, we didn't see that coming. You know, we picked the wrong damn day to play our worst game. But we learned, you know, we've already learned some things from that game, and I think we're going to be better because of that wrong. But if we had to lose a game in the playoffs, you know, if we'd have lost the game by 1 point overtime or something, we may be sitting here saying, you know, we're just a player or two away. We don't need to do anything. But, you know, the way that team jumped on us in that first half and that we gave ourselves no chance after the first half, you know, no one's going to be complacent. And the coaching staff, we've already, you know, we know there's some things, some adjustments, some things we can do better. As the players, you know, players know that as well. So I like the focus right now, you know, going into the offseason. I like the mindset of the players. And just hopefully we can build off of what we did last year, because now I'm having a chance to reflect on the whole season and look at some of the positives. And, you know, we were 12-4. Guys did a good job of putting themselves in position, you know, to win it all. But we didn't get it done, but I think we can build off of that.
Hey, listen, you own that completely. That was a really honest answer, but there were a lot of positives in that season. You won 12 games, and the team showed a lot of grit and a lot of toughness and a lot of heart. As an example, Joey Bosa missed the first half of the season. Hunter Henry returned for the final game. Melvin Gordon missed time. Keenan Allen missed time. The list goes on, but you guys kept finding ways to win, especially on the road. So how do you explain your group's ability to take those hits and just keep on rolling?
You know, it speaks to the character of our locker room and our football team. And, you know, and Tom Telesco's done a nice job of, you know, bringing in the right players, you know, and bringing in what we need. And, you know, I can't say enough about our team's character. You know, the guys moved down from San Diego, and, you know, guys moving out, living out of boxes, you know, playing in a smaller stadium. These guys have approached that with a great attitude. And I believe because of their attitudes, it's made us more resilient. It's made us a tougher football team. And, you know, we don't want to use excuses or complain. We want to just go out and produce. And for the most part, I think our guys did that.
Anthony Lynn joining us from the Pro Bowl, the head coach of the LA Chargers. You know, you look at the situation with the coaches and guys losing their job and the trend towards the types of coaches that are getting opportunities. You know, there's been this move towards teams hiring guys who are associated with quarterbacks. You were a running backs coach before you became an offensive coordinator and then a head coach. 2 years into your time as a head coach, how much of it now is about just being able to run an offense as opposed to being a leader of an entire team?
You know, I unfortunately, you know, you see that trend, and I think you saw it this year. I've said it all along, and in every interview I was in six head coaching interviews, and I've said it, you know, it's a different skill set to be a head coach in this league than to be a play caller or a position coach. And I think we're missing out on some quality head coaches because of our criteria. You know, I was told I had to check all the boxes, you know. A couple of owners told me I need to be a coordinator before I be a head coach. I didn't believe that. I eventually became a coordinator, but now I see guys getting jobs that it's never called a play in the damn league. So I'm like, just be consistent, you know. But it's just, you know, that's, they have the right. It's their team. They can do whatever they want to do. But I still say that we're firing 8 head coaches a year. We need to look at the hiring process, and I think there are a lot of leaders out there that can be good head coaches and may never coordinate.
You know, and then on top of that, at the start of the season, there were 8 head coaches of color in the league. The number has changed dramatically since the start of the season. What is your reaction when you see that?
You know, I try to look at it as just coaches, Rome. Really, I do. I don't even like to talk about black coaches, white coaches. I just want to be a coach. And I look forward to the day and time when we look at it that way, everyone. But, you know, we're not there yet. And I don't know. You know, you look at the guys that got let go. You know, guys get let go every single year. White guys, black guys, and all my friends. And I call them, I say the same thing. You know, and wish them well, and they bounce back. But, you know, I just think this year, unfortunately, it happened to be more African Americans than it was white coaches, you know?
Anthony Lynn joining us. He's the head coach of the LA Chargers. You know, I'm looking at your approach, though. Like, as part of leadership in the offseason, you and team psychologist Herb Martin developed a program where you had guys come together in small groups, and they discussed things like life, things like accountability. When did you start thinking about workshops like that, and what kind of an impact have they had? It's really interesting.
You know, I tell you, when Coach Walsh came and got me out of the locker room, and we talked about coaching one day, you know, I don't think I ever went into a player meeting the same. I always went in with probably more of a coach's mindset. And I just wrote down a lot of things that if I was a coach, what I'd do and what I wouldn't do. And I think one of the things we have to do a better job of in the offseason is, you know, we have to start getting our guys ready for life after football. And too many of us are failing after we're done with this game. And that's a shame because men that go through what we have to go through to play in this league, the work ethic, the discipline, the camaraderie, the relationships should be turning up out in the real world. And yet, I think 69-70% of us were failing after 4 or 5 years or so. That in the offseason, there are a lot of days when I talk to my guys about everything but football. I think, you know, the better man you are off the field, the better man you're going to be on the field. And I just know when you prepare for the next step in your life, you can enjoy this game a hell of a lot more. I know that. And that would solve a lot of our, you know, execution issues right there, just guys having fun. And when you make mistakes, letting them go and go on to the next play. But, you know, when guys are living and dying on one play here and there and thinking they're going to get cut, I mean, that's hard. That's a hard way to live, man.
Anthony Lynn, my guest. So finally then, I mean, you're so focused on what these guys need to do in the offseason to get as much out of themselves as men, right? Not just football players, but as men. So as the guy who leads the group, like, how do you approach your offseason? For instance, are you locked in 24/7, 365, or can you get away, unplug? And if so, what do you focus on?
You know, I'm locked in, man. I love what I do, and I focus on this. And in the offseason, like I say, it's a lot of football. Now, we get these guys for a lot of football, but I just think there are times when we have to just talk as men and get to know one another as men so that, you know, if we don't know each other, we won't trust each other. And that's a fact. And we got to trust each other, and if we can trust each other, then we can play for one another, and we don't care who get the credit. And I think selfless is one of our core values, and our guys, they've completely bought into that. And they got, you know, and I think that builds, you know, trust, and you can have healthy conflict on a football team and get the best ideals without people getting their feelings hurt. And so, you know, we strive for little things like that. You know, we all have the big stuff. You know, we got the same facilities. We all got the same salary cap. We all pick from the same elite pool of players. We got the best facilities in the world and all that. But, you know, I think it's the littlest things make the biggest difference in this league. And in all season, I think that's the time when you can focus on those things.
I appreciate you and your time. Last thought, you're focused on your thing, but you got the big game coming up next week, so you know what the Patriots are all about. You saw that firsthand. Then you got your neighbor across the street in the Rams. How do you think that game goes? Who do you like?
You know, it's two good football teams. I mean, the Rams are extremely talented. You know, when you look at their roster, the first-round picks and the offensive player of the year and defensive player of the year and the number one pick in the draft, a quarterback. I mean, they have an extremely talented football team. But then you got Tom Brady, you know, and Coach Belichick over here who's been there and done it. So I can't make a, you know, I don't have any opinion on who's going to win the game. And I just know the team that executes the best, the team that's going to win. I have friends on both sides of the ball, so I wish them both well.
Make Super Bowl Sunday a master-built Sunday. The big game is next weekend, and how many big plays have you missed because you were stuck babysitting the grub on the grill? There is a very easy solution. Masterbuilt Smokers. Let a Masterbuilt Smoker simplify your game day experience with the perfect smoked foods. That way you spend more time with your family and friends, and you can enjoy the big game. They have the perfect smoker for everybody with options featuring the ease of electric, traditional charcoal, or the convenience of propane. Let Masterbuilt Smokers do all the work, and you take all the credit. Masterbuilt smokers are available at Home Depot, Lowe's, Sam's Club, Academy, Bass Pro, and Cabela's. And for more information, recipe, and tips, simply go to Masterbuilt.com. That's Masterbuilt.com. Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. I hope you had an amazing weekend. Great to be with you on the league's biggest stage. The refs choked. They choked hard. Why don't we start with the most obvious and egregious disaster from the Zebras? Go ahead. Roll it.
Yeah! Where's the flag?
I know that being an NFL official is hard. It's nearly impossible, but you simply cannot miss that call.
Simple. They blew the call.
You can't miss that call. Give them the help they need or take it all away. What you're doing right now is not working.
The referee blew that whole game.
Redo it at the interference call.
I want to hear from somebody who watches the Canadian Football League. Manitoba, Regina, Moose Jaw, Winnipeg. Oh, Maurice, the San Jose Sharks wondered if there was Wi-Fi in Winnipeg.
I don't know if they ever fly into Winnipeg to go shopping, but if you're looking to have a good life, great place to raise your family.
The dynasty.
You got any touchdown plays on that call sheet still? He said, yes, I do.
Pats are done when Tom and the Hood say they're done. Same damn pats. Ian O'Connor is the senior writer for ESPN.
Jim, I think it's the greatest dynasty in American sports in my lifetime.
Ethan Happ is my guest. What is the college experience in Madison like?
If you want him to have a great 4 years or 5 years, maybe it
turns
out
bro.
There's no other place that I think I would have looked at. Too much fun to pass up.
I tried to inform my dad that I'd be taking a fifth year, and he's like, oh, hell no.
Oh, hell
I literally
no.
said to my father, it's not like you can't afford it. Wrong answer, Junior. Seriously, right?
Email.
Alvin, you are the father.
Alvin,
you are the father. Alvin, you are the father. Alvin, you are the father. Sign Morey.
I didn't look back at the ball. Since I just went straight to him, I just heard the crowd go crazy, and I was like, oh, this
dude
is
dude was de-cleated. At least five Mississippis before the ball actually arrived.
And I ain't going to watch the Super Bowl.
On Tuesday, that's still the only thing anybody's talking about.
The ref said it was incomplete. Respect the call.
Twitter!
I can't get my pass interference.
How am
I can't get my PI call.
Goals?
How come I'm getting hit
Jeez,
in the head?
Touched.
I can't get a commissioner rule change. Where's the commissioner?
Goals?
Where's Roger Goodell?
I'm getting touched.
Welcome to the friggin'
National Football League.
Circumcision. It's your decision.
O-L-D-E-R-U-D. John Olderud. This place is like a prison. The fellow inmates around me are making a lot of noise.
It's Carmelo Anthony.
Oh. It is Carmelo Anthony and cash. That is one step removed from just throwing this guy up on Craigslist. Man, life comes at you fast.
Are you kidding me?
Clay Thompson.
Sean Lane's to my guest. Video game Clay going 10 of 10 for him going up for four dunks.
Man, I'm going to go with video game Clay.
Ridiculous.
I'm still wondering what that protein stain by the headboard is.
I've been on Broadway and I'm playing Povich's 70th birthday party. Are you kidding me?
What the hell happened?
Yeah, what the fuck happened?
From Torrey Pines Golf
Charlie Hoffman joins me. The plan was a rock a big old long mullet, stick out a little bit.
One more thought about that ride.
It was horrible. How'd you get the Dodge Colt? Where'd you get that info?
Pat, I want to remind you, this is not your show. This is not my podcast. No F-bombs, nothing like that.
That's going to be tough for me. You know?
I was going to say, you're going to be all right.
It'll be tough.
So
it's 44 North Huckleberry Vodka, and I mix it with Sunny D, and it's like drinking Kool-Aid. It's
nothing. Yeah. You know, getting into it, whatever, you know. Now I'm kind of like into it, right?
My man, Mike Smith, joining me. What was shared belief like? As a horse, was he in the conversation with the best that you've ridden?
Oh, without a doubt. And again, we didn't get to see the best of him. He was a fighter.
Email.
Hey, Bob, you smug, fake, baking kook. Your horse should have been DQ'd, and you know it.
The fans want to bury them in a hole. It should have been St. Paul with first and goal. Instead, the Rams go to the Super Bowl because of five blind refs.
That little turd
Edelman.
The only t-shirt that bitch should be wearing should say, without Tom Brady, I'd be a waiter.
Pencils down, bitches.
Twitter.
Does Widow Wiki in Buffalo need a baba?
I don't know if Keith Arnold's been doing a lot of stress eating, but does that guy have bitch tits now?
And who's the new guy in the corner? That kid looks like Paulie D from the Jersey Shore.
I was even at Reggie Miller's last game with a 100-degree fever flu because I wanted to see Reggie Miller.
Caleb, did you just say that you played through a 100-degree flu?
I'm the rag of the sun! We put the Brady Bunch through their arms!
stickiest of the ickiest.
Or being a master-built smoker.
Tom Curran, if Brady were to win, would that impact his decision-making?
I don't think it's going to. I think he's having too much fun. I truly think he is going to stick around.
Oh, my God. Did he lose that one, too?
Dude, no, busted.
Oh, my God. Wasn't it great?
You want to make a two-week absence look like a one-week absence by showing up on Friday?
Oh, that's not going to work, Hawk. That's not how that looks. And the other thing is, you're not scoring points with me, and I'm the only one who matters.
I know.
So what are you doing here?
What were you doing there?
Anthony Lynn is my guest.
We didn't see that coming. You know, we picked the wrong damn day to play our worst game. But we learned, and I think we're going to be better because of that wrong.
Caitlin Ohashi is my guest. How about Janet Jackson?
Oh, my gosh. I had to sit down for that one. That one. It's like, what?
War my fiance. War me.
You horse-tooth jackass.
You're a fat 50-year-old junior high teacher in Buffalo with a giant head, dude.
Get it freaking right.
All right, Jim. Thanks. Anytime, man.
Thanks so much, Jim. Always great talking to you.
Stay humble and stay hungry.
Ram 41, Patriot 10.
Hey, Four Eyes.
Belly Clarkson.
Matt.
Come up with a shot for you right here.
5-year penalty.
Jonathan Ray.
Good night now.
Caitlin Ohashi is my guest. Caitlin, so nice to meet you. Good to have you on the show. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm
Thanks
so
for having
good.
Me.
Really nice to have you. You know, I'm so happy to talk to you because it's been nearly 2 weeks since you had that perfect 10-floor routine in Anaheim that absolutely blew up online. We've been talking about it being international news. You're getting love from all over the world, from members of Congress, from my friend Jemele Hill. The list goes on and on. I've got to ask, what has your life been like the last 2 weeks?
It's been crazy. I feel like I've been in interview after interview. My social media has been like through the roof. You know, honestly, I've only got recognized a couple times, but I do see a couple people like looking at me funny, but no, it's been really cool and I'm grateful for everything.
Yeah, it's really so neat. And that was your fourth career perfect 10 on the floor. Now, whenever I have an elite athlete on the show like you and they do something truly special, I always ask the question, did you know going into the event that you had something special in you that day? What was your sense going into that?
Oh my gosh, going into it was super funny because that was my first time doing the split double leg in the competition. And I was honestly like, okay, just like try and make it. And so, you know, like I didn't have too much expectations going in. I was just going to have fun and perform and and it all came together that day, I guess.
I want to make sure that the listeners understand that. I mean, the story was, and you just said it, you changed your first tumbling pass that week to the split double layout, and then you nailed it. What was it like to nail that thing on a big stage like that? And as you look back on the routine, what else do you remember?
I just remember, like, after I hit that pass, and then my second pass was I upgraded this year. And so it was really cool to, like, after that pass, the second pass, everything was like perfect and spot on. And so I was like, okay, this is going to be fun. Like I was just, you know, clapping with the audience and having a good time out there. And I remember like the audience would get really loud at times and then really quiet. And it was like, they were super engaged. And it was a really cool feeling.
Caitlin Ohashi joining us. Is it like a lot of other athletes talk about when things are like, when you're in the zone, was it all in slow motion? What did it feel like?
No, I wouldn't say slow motion. I think, you know, it was just like any floor team. Like I was just, you know, I don't even know. I just going through the motions, but like just enjoying myself, honestly.
I mean, I absolutely, right? It looked like you were having the time of your life. People watching were having so much fun. Do you have any idea when you left the floor what the reaction was going to be like online? And then as this thing started to gain momentum and started to get bigger and bigger and bigger, faster and faster, what was that like?
Yeah, I had no idea leaving the floor that anything like that was going to happen. So last year, my routine went viral too, and we were just kind of trying to up this one with joyful music and more intricate dancing. And so when it wasn't televised or anything, our videographer, Deanna, decided to put it online through UCLA Gymnastics, and I was ice skating at the time when my phone was like blowing up on Twitter, and I was just like, why are my notifications going off? Like typically I have them turned off, and it was crazy. So then I start realizing like people are sending me screenshots and like this person's tweeting you and like all this. So yeah, I wasn't expecting all of that attention,
well, I mean,
but especially so soon, because that was the second meet of the year.
Right, and your phone's going crazy, but then you get like, how about Janet Jackson? Janet Jackson retweets the video with, quote, amazing 10-10-10. What did it mean to see that?
Oh my gosh, I had to sit down for that one. That was, it's like, what? Like, she was literally a lot of the inspiration behind the routine, so just the fact that she even noticed it and said something about it was so crazy. Like, such high-profile people noticing, I don't know, a UCLA gymnast, me.
UCLA gymnast Caitlin Ohashi is my guest. I want to say one of my favorite things of all, though, one of my favorite parts of this was to see every single one of your teammates in the background doing the routine right along with you, and they're just as happy, if not happier, for you than even you, maybe, when you nailed it. How would you describe the bond that you have with that team, and what's it like being part of that group?
Oh, my gosh. It's such a team dynamic thing, and like coming from elite where you are mostly an individual, it's like crazy, and to have that support because it's like no matter what happens, they always have your back, and we always do it for each other, and the love, and it's amazing to be a part of something like that.
That was really fun to see. Now, the thing is, if you look at the performance in a vacuum, that'd be worthy of this conversation or a lot of the interviews you've done, but there's so much more that goes into it. That was not in a vacuum. As you point out, that was not your first 10 on the floor. You had that monster routine last year against Oklahoma that also was amazing. But I think what people are now appreciating is your journey. If you go back a few years, you were on the national team at 12. You were an Olympic hopeful. You seemed to have everything. But how were you feeling at that point? Did you love gymnastics then?
No, I think throughout that whole entire portion of my gymnastics career, I had lost my joy through the sport, and I honestly didn't like it at all. I felt like I was doing it for everyone else besides myself. So I went through a really hard time, and that's kind of when I got injured and took a step back and got to really like rediscover my love for the sport again after like a full year of being out. And that's when I decided like switch my career and like goal path, just because my body honestly couldn't even handle anything else if I wanted to. So yeah, it was a blessing in disguise.
So the time off was great, but also at that time, people were talking about your weight. And in a piece for the Players Tribune, you said that you were told that it was embarrassing how big you had become, and you were actually compared to a bird that couldn't fly. I mean, what a terrible, terrible thing for somebody to hear, much less somebody that age. At that age, what was it like to hear things like that?
I definitely believed it. I think as an impressionable young girl, everything I heard, I would take in and I would absorb, and I hated even looking in the mirror at that point. I felt ashamed, and yeah, I definitely would have agreed to everything everyone was saying to me and about me. So it was really, really tough.
All right, so you kept battling and you tried to play through and fight through the injuries, and then as you point out, you did step away finally. You need that time off, and you went to college, and maybe there were some around you who were not thrilled with that decision, but you had to do what you had to do for you, and then the joy started to come back, right? How did the joy return? What was that like? How'd you rediscover the joy?
I would say after my freshman year and going through that whole adapting to college and realizing that my coaches were on my side, like Miss Bao was a huge part of me, like finding my joy again. She allowed me to discover me as a person before an athlete, and it took off this pressure from gymnastics, and I was able to come back and feel like I was validated as more than just this gymnast. And that meant so much to me, and the fact that she would like hang out with me and just ask me about how I was doing. That was, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So the final thought then, I mean, let's be clear about this too. Your coach, Valerie Condos Field, who is an absolute legend, to your point, does not just talk about gymnastics. She talks about living a powerful and successful life. So then what's it been like to hear the impact that you've had on people in the last 2 weeks, and not just because of your floor routine, but because of who you are and how you live?
I think it's really neat because never would I have imagined all of this. And it's kind of like I've been living my life trying to find the passion that I have for everything outside of gymnastics. And it's kind of just opened a lot of doors, and it's super exciting that I'm not just seen as a gymnast, because that's what I feel like I've been like trying to work on, not being an athlete. And it's really inspiring to see that other people see that as well.
Victor by Broadway. Vic, what's up?
What's up, man? Hey, this thing with Joe Montana building a marijuana empire. I mean, damn, are we talking about Joe Montana or Tony Montana? You know, this definitely puts a whole new light on that legendary story about him pointing out John Candy at the Super Bowl, you know? I mean, we used to think that was proof of cool Joe being totally calm under pressure, you know, but now it probably just means he was high on the tree. Oh, bro, check it out, man. That's like totally John Candy up in the stands, bro. Hey, man, hey, Sapolo, check it out, dude. Isn't that awesome, man? Dude, I'm hungry, man. Anybody got some Pringles? I mean, no wonder the guy was pimping Skechers and Papa John's. That's what IRA Joe does all day. He just sits around in Skechers, eating pizza and playing Madden. You know, Rome, I'm so freaking tired of these crying-ass New Orleans Saints, man. You know, now they're trying to invoke some obscure rule where the commissioner can, like, start the game back up with 2 minutes left. Come on, man. To quote Avon Barksdale from The Wire, you talking about a do-over, baby? A freaking do-over? You can't do that, man. That's not the way the game is played. Look, Saints fans, in Week 16 against the Steelers, you got over on a horrible 50-yard interference call against Joe Hayden, and that helped you win the game and get home field advantage so you wouldn't have to go on the road to the Coliseum, all right? So stop bitching about a bang-bang play. You didn't get screwed. There's no guarantee your kicker wasn't going to hit the upright or you weren't going to fumble the snap. So you got what you deserved. You are what your record says you are, which is second place in the NFC. That's pretty good. I mean, it's just so delusional for these guys to think they're owed anything more than that, you know? Kind of like as delusional as that Muppet Rick in Buffalo talking smack about the Patriots. Okay, think about this, Rome. Here we have a Buffalo Bills fan calling a radio show to run weak smack on New England right after they made their ninth Super Bowl of this generation. What a moron. But hey, that's the guy's entire brand, though, you know? I mean, his whole shtick is hating on things that are vastly superior to him and then hanging up the phone and heading on over to Twitter all satisfied like he just got over or something. You're not getting over, Bonk. You're a fat 50-year-old junior high teacher in Buffalo with a giant head, dude. You're not getting over. Okay, I mean, Rome, did you see the pictures of that Buffalo convention of dorks that Rick organized at the Sabres game? Jesus, man. Yeah, what a collection of winners that was. I mean, Rome, you know I love your show. I got your back. But I will never go to a sporting event while carrying around a Jim Rome show sign with me, okay? And that's because I want to have at least some semblance of a chance of ever seeing a vagina again. And finally, and you know, speaking of guys being...
Let's go to Jeff in San Antonio. Y'all know him. Jeff, what's going on?
What is up, Jim? Happy 2019.
You too.
Just wanted to call and kind of remind everybody that, number one, I am a badass. And number two, that today is the anniversary, the birthday of baby Jordan. She was born a year ago today. And I just wanted to call and let everybody know that we're a badass family. And it'll be nice to have two Master Built smokers because your calls today have been horrible. It's obvious Adam Hawks trying to go with this Horace Grant look to try and be a coat rider. What's up with him having a baby so close to Jordan's birthday? War my fiance, war me, and war Jordan. I'm out.
Rack him. Little Rock, Nooch, he bakes. Nooch, what's up?
Romy, I do bake. This has been like the week of you flying bat signals, so kind of figured I'd take my shot. I think Montana getting into the Tron business is pretty awesome, man. I'm excited about that. If he delivers on his nugs even close to how he delivered in his career in sports, I got high expectations. You know, I really kind of hate the way the NFL is treating players smoking Tron because, I mean, I get it. You don't want these guys to make bad decisions, but can we acknowledge the fact that they're professional athletes? Like, they've made pretty good decisions in life to end up where they're at. These aren't 14-year-olds that are buying the dirt from Matt in L.A. Like, these are athletes. That's pretty much all I got, Romy. War being a master-built smoker and war seeing you in Atlanta next week, buddy. Out.
Again, thanks for the warning, Newt.
Good night now!